All right, folks, welcome to the U.S. Afternoon Areas Working Group call. In the Zoom chat, I have a link to this this week's meeting agenda. We are today talking about the DiffNR project. Some areas did method spec stuff and did resolution and did spec issues. I'm really excited about today's agenda because I'm not primarily talking. So that's exciting for me. Please be mindful of the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Be good to each other and don't do anything illegal. Grateful for those adding to the attendees list that can help people connect with you if they hear something on the meeting or they would like to work along with you. Entirely optional, of course. Stephen, do we need this announcement still on the mobile agents MOU stuff?
No, I was just going to remove it. We have a number of people that have expressed interest and have signed the MOU, and we're moving forward on that, and we'll be working with them over the next couple of months.
Awesome. Glad you're involved in stuff and helping everyone out. That's awesome. There is the Sovereign Foundation, I believe, is the host of an Aries workshop and Connectathon December 3rd through 5th in Provo, Utah. We don't have a ton of details at this point, but we wanted to let you know that it was happening so you could reserve space on your calendar for that. We will be working out the details and updating that. Specifically, I want to note this is not intended as a boot camp. So if you are brand new and would like to show up and have someone walk you through the early steps, this is possibly not the best event for you. We had prior to the creation of Aries, we had an indie connectathon, and it will be a little bit more along those lines. We'll likely vary some things from last time, but it was a really good event that helps us move a lot of things forward. And so we're planning for that. So hold that date open if you can. Any other announcements? Okay, on the related meetings review, this morning's call, we're talking, the time was spent talking a lot about the SDK design and split and architecture and threading models and everything else. So that call is recorded, and please jump over there if you have an interest to listen to that. To get to the morning meetings, by the way, you've likely already figured this out, but listed under here, we have the two calls listed. You have to check the dates because we try to create them a little bit ahead so that we can plan for the next one. So this was this morning's call, it has the notes and information there. It looks like the recordings are not quite present yet, but they will be soon. So please go ahead and listen to those. One of the advantages of downloading and either listening to the audio or watching the video is you can often play it faster than real time, which is kind of nice. Any other comments on the morning Aries call? Okay, and at the risk of just going through a list here, is there anything on related calls that we need to bring up and make the community aware of? Or say any maintainers or the implementers call? Okay, I'm hearing none. Let's proceed with work updates. Anyone from the BC Gov team with notes on the Aries Cloud Agent Python recent updates?
Yes, I have a pull request, which I'll probably look at while we talk here on 131. So getting that release out, basically it's some cleanup of the 031 release. And this was 03, it's a cleanup on the 030 release. Some things on TAA support, a little bit of cleanup on the command line parameters, and then a pull request that Sam put in on multi-use invitations. So those things are all going into the new tag of release of Akamai.
Awesome. Thanks for your good work there. Aries Framework Go, is Troy on the call?
Hey, I'm here.
Yep.
So I mentioned this on the morning call as well. I provided some links about our current iteration work on the framework. The first links are the project planning links. We're doing it via GitHub projects. The second set of links are the first few epics that we're working on to get to a Git Exchange milestone. So you'll see there we're working on the base infrastructure for the framework, Envelope Crypto, did peer, did resolution via web clients. That specifically means Universal Resolver API and Sidetree API. And we're doing the first protocol as Git Exchange, along with a controller API that we will use to execute demos and integration tests.
Excellent. Is this Key Ruby? I think this was also on this morning's call.
Yeah, Sam, this is Jack. Everything's been completed, the migration over from the personal project. So that was done, and a gem has been published on rubygems.org.
Awesome. Thanks, Jack, for your work on that. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other announcements before we get into our main agenda today? Okay, we will have some time later if you want to bring some more stuff up. Hopefully at the end of the call, we'll have a few minutes. Our first item on the list, Ori is here to talk about the Diff Interop project. I'll let him explain, but this is a project that we have the opportunity to get involved in and help with that could go a long way for bridging projects. Various community, but with others as well, as we're seeking to standardize in the broader picture of things. So let me stop sharing, Ori, and give you that way you can, and take it away.
Cool. I'm actually going to let Ruben give a brief introduction, and then I'm going to handle the technical part.
Yes, we're tagging him here. Thank you.
Perfect.
So maybe just a bit of background. First of all, I think one minor detail, which might be kind of relevant, is like we never intended it to be like a pure diff interop project. It's actually what we call like an SSI interop project. So it should be, it's intended to be broader than quote unquote just diff. The background here is that, so this is a document I can share later. This was just something we used amongst the folks who were in the early calls. Defining like what the objectives are that we have, like a lot of teams who are building their own projects and pilots and then experimenting with things, and that we want to have like more engagement in the community. So we thought, okay, what can we do as like a tangible project, like something where we can demonstrate all the things we're talking about all the time. Like we just assume that DIDs across different ecosystems will work because we talk about this since years, but we haven't really proven that much. So I think one of the discussions that can be good to have multiple identity products truly showing that all the things we assume will work can actually work. And that means like multiple DID methods, multiple different providers, and so on and so on. That was kind of the background. And we said, can we build like a little prototype, like a product, but front to back? And we accepted there's obviously like a million things we could do, a million discussions we could have. But we said, okay, can we do something in the next 6 months, which might be ambitious, or I think maybe over ambitious now at this point, but kind of like, can we do this year something where we can actually show and demonstrate front to back that something worked? What we did then is we brought a few of us together and said, okay, what's the simple, like a very simple use case? And we mapped out this like really, really tiny little use case, and I will not talk about it in detail, but ultimately, it's about an educational website where you, like, it's a website where you go and you get like some kind of course and you get a credential issued from that to your wallet in some form. And then you go to another website and you share it for a job application. That's the use case we picked, just to have something we can all relate to. And then we went one level deeper and tried to map out how that flow would look like. And this is like something we did a few months ago, where you can see, okay, questions which came up, okay, oh, do we do a QR code? How do we share this? How does it go back and forth? So we have like establishing a connection, issuance of the credentials, and then the consumption. So these were like the three different steps. And just by having this conversation amongst different teams and different products and different perspectives, it raised, I think, some good conversations. And then we transitioned this into a bit more structure, and that's where Ori will talk about in a second. So we have a GitHub page, issues, and a mailing list, and we have now, for now, it's just really like small. We set this up only a few weeks ago. So we have like about 20 people from like across the board, I think pretty good, or a good starting point, let's say. And we would love to have everybody who is interested joining this list. And and let's say maybe at this point I hand over to Ori, like how we organize ourselves, what decisions we have already made, and how we plan to proceed with discussing issues. So Ori, over to you.
Sure.
You want to have the share the screen, or you want me to continue?
If you could drive, that'd actually be awesome.
Sure.
So the main, like you've just mentioned, Ruben, you know, the significant challenge here is there's so many different companies that have a DID method, and maybe they have an identity wallet, maybe it's a mobile application, maybe it's a cloud agent. And so the key challenge that the Interop project has is actually finding a way for us all to communicate and actually be able to share credentials back and forth. And so there's a number of open issues, and there's been some excellent contributions already from Stephen from BCGov and Daniel Hardman. And so we really appreciate chipping in on, you know, helping us understand how and where Aries can fit into this workflow. But at a high level, the way that the coordination works for the Interop project is there's open issues which are for discussion, and then within the various working groups within the DIF, there are regular attempts to adopt proposals. And at some point, when the proposals get far enough along to the point where we think we can move from a specification and a proposal to a concrete implementation, we will get to that point. So one thing to note, you know, about some of the objectives of the Interop project is they overlap a lot with code and things that various different members have had to solve already. Like, you know, in particular, a lot of the DIDCOM communication flow or the VC, auth, and OIDC integration, these are things that, you know, are familiar to the Aries community and that other members have their own implementations that aren't necessarily compatible. And so one of the key areas, you know, and opportunities for contribution is just helping explain to other people who have potentially other DID methods or have other implementations what exists out there and how it's been solved by Aries and how they can leverage what exists today. So I think there's a couple key issues which I'd like to draw the attention of this, you know, community on this call to. The first is the Interop has support for VC, auth, and OIDC. This is taken directly from the documentation that I can find regarding, you know, the use case for authentication and credential binding that the BCGov is looking at. And, you know, there was some initial confusion over, like, it took me a while to understand what you guys were trying to do here, so I apologize for some of the back and forth flow. It just took me a while to understand exactly what was going on. But this is an example of a potential solution that would solve a big part of what the Interop project is trying to do with one particular implementation. And one of the main questions that I have around this particular issue is where's the documentation for other DID methods like BTCR or ETHR, Sidetree, Ion, these kinds of things, for being able to leverage this issue. So if you know anything about that, please come help provide comments. Another place sort of for interoperability or discussion is around the credential format. So we've adopted ES256K JWTs as the initial non-repudiable credential format. However, we're attempting to abide by, I believe, the same W3C verifiable credential standards. And so there's an opportunity for direct integration with Aries agents and for credential exchange. And in order to get those integrations into the Interop project, we need to just have a better understanding of what the easiest path to that integration is. So if that's something that, you know, members of this call are excited about, you know, please feel free to open issues, raise concerns, questions. And another thing I should mention is we invite criticism, and we want to be told where we're wrong or where an issue is hasn't gotten something right. So please argue if you feel like something that you know more about than anybody else is being misinterpreted. We need that to provide that clarity to the wider community as a whole. Like Ruben mentioned, you know, the purpose of this project is to show interoperability across DID methods and wallets and agents and, you know, potentially hubs. And that's a super challenging thing to do, but it can only be accomplished where the experts in each of those fields are bringing the solution and helping provide the puzzle pieces to the rest of the community so we can fit them together. So that's the main reason why I'm here to attend the call. I guess the resident steward of the GitHub issues for the project. And I'd love to see issues raised or concerns or suggestions around how we can get Aries connected more directly to the project.
Cool. Maybe just some closing thoughts from my side as well. It's like, A, we really want to be inclusive. That is not like an isolated thing. We had early discussions of like, what are the compromises we need to make to move forward? And we know that different teams have different approaches. So this is not meant to be like defining any standards here. What we need, I think it raises all the questions, because doing it end to end, we need to, like, we cannot hand wave things away. We actually need to discuss like very detailed, nuanced things. And I think it, from an experience of like how we've seen this in Diff, which we talked about some of these interlock things, it just opens up a lot of questions, and that's then often very good specific problems or specific things we can then also discuss in working groups. And ideally, this is something we could do, which also drives questions and discussions in other quote-unquote non-diff communities or at rebooting or wherever the right places are to discuss these problems, that we can solve them to demonstrate that what we are building here actually makes sense across the ecosystem.
So are you interested in providing interop between different signature formats as well? Or are you focused on one to try to get the thing up and going and then add the others later?
Great question. We would love to see interop between different signature and credential formats. You know, one of the key challenges is the limitations of the underlying identity wallets. And so there is an open issue regarding cipher suites and credential formats. And we're looking right now at adopting ES256K, JWTs, JWS, RS256, and EDESA, JWTs. So those raw cryptographic formats we're desiring to adopt them. We believe there's concrete implementations out there that should support interoperability, but obviously if you are a member and you have a specific wallet and you cannot create RSA signatures, then you're not going to be creating RSA credentials and sharing them with anybody. So we want to support standard cryptography that is well-defined and well-adopted, and we're doing our best to just start with what we think is the best shot at a single suite that has the broadest applicability. But we're very open to proposals to adopt a more widely adopted cryptographic standard. So if it's something you care about, please, you know, raise an issue or challenge us.
One of the advantages that I see with this interop project is that while the credential formats are not the ones that have been historically important in this community that are related to Indy, it does a good job demonstrating the cross-ledger nature of the Aries project itself. The Aries project, I believe, is the leading open source component that can serve as an enterprise agent, and that plays a good role in lots of different places. And so we have the opportunity to jump in and sort of demonstrate its utility in that capacity. It's worth noting that the interop project is not asking all players to do all things, and so we have an opportunity to identify the best places to slot in the Aries agent and then build support for the required components.
Hey, Reuven, just ask, do you think that the conversation that we've been having on a back channel about repudiation is entangled with this conversation about credentials? Because in my mind, they're entirely separate conversations, but I just, I'm wondering now if people in the diff are thinking that maybe they're getting the wrong idea that we don't want to, have credential formats be open. Like,
yeah.
Any credential can be sent over DIDCOM. We're not pushing back at all about what kind of credentials there are. We're only, in my mind, talking about a separate mechanism.
Yep. Yeah. I think there's definitely been confusion over that. And I think it's just the word repudiable. I think it's just the fact that some people hear that word and they cannot think about anything but the legal context, and then they get like lost. The reason I use the word on this call is, I know that this community has historically, focused on non-repudiable credential formats first. And there's actually now beginning work support for, or I may have gotten that wrong, repudiable first, now beginning to support non-repudiable with DIDCOM, at least the library in the, under the diff. And from my perspective, I think there is confusion from members in terms of understanding the differences between those things. But from an implementation perspective, the desire within the interop project is to provide credential interoperability in exchange between various different DID methods and wallets. So some wallets may really prefer repudiable credentials, and that may be the thing that they desire. If they want to interact with a wallet that does not in any way support that, then there has to be some way of communicating that. I believe DIDCOM supports that, and the Aries protocol supports that. And so I think people are potentially confused about it. And it, one of the things that I'm trying to do with the Interop project is have a place where we can clarify the technical discussion around this, so we can separate technically what we support from philosophical, conversations and that kind of thing.
I personally also think it's a lot of the things in this intro project will be out of scope, not because we don't think it's important, but I think just to time box something, we talked about, do we do this just command line? Do we build this with like mobile implementations? I think there's so many questions we want to solve. And I think that's why we often cut the scope to the bare minimum just to demonstrate an end-to-end flow between multiple entities. I think we should continue the discussion. As you mentioned, maybe should not call them backdoor or back-channel discussions, because I think it's a very open question. I think you should maybe find a better place to discuss about this. So I think all the points I've seen in this email exchange over the last few days were quite valuable. I don't think they're necessarily part of the scope for the intro project itself.
Okay, I'm just putting together two and two and realizing that maybe this is part of the source of the dissonance and I need to communicate better. So thank you for helping me clarify. And for the record, I think it's great that we should, Aries code should totally support this interop project. And that includes supporting the kind of credentials that you guys have settled on. I don't have any pushback on that.
Awesome. Thank you.
Any other questions?
How about this, Johnny? So this EDT DSA SECP256K1 signature 200919 is there a registry? Is this basically going to be in this the W3C security context for namespace registration?
Yeah, so there's a JSON linked data signature suite, which has a draft, and there's an open PR that's linked through for the ECDSA SECP256K1 2019. That is a JSON linked data signature suite. Underneath that is a ES256K JWS/JWT implementation. That is the thing that we're attempting to actually standardize and use for the purposes of the interop project. This JSON linked data signature bit is just, there is a that's an open PR to the W3C to establish that signature suite standard. Digital Bazaar and some of the other guys in the community have their own implementations of it, and it's built on ES256K. So they're separate things, and we're only looking at JWT support currently for the Interop project.
Right, and I suppose, and is there going to be any differences between the JWT work and linked data signatures? Is it the same thing?
So, I mean, from a cryptography perspective, the nice thing about that JSON linked data signature suite is that it uses JWS for the signature format. So it's the same ES256K alg. It's a nature of JSON linked data signature suites. They don't include an embedded payload. So it has two periods in the center of the JWS that are sitting next to each other. And that's to conform with the other JSON linked data signature suites that follow that pattern. So they use the same underlying Jose, you know, draft ready algorithm. But outside of that, they are different credential formats.
Okay.
Awesome. Hey, thanks guys for presenting. I will mention that there is the link to the Interop project in the decentralized identity GitHub organization that is in the agenda linked under here. So if you have questions or you want to jump into the issues, that's the right place to go. And there, the README there also has information on how to get involved. So this is definitely something we can jump into and figure out what we need to do to support and slot into that project. So grateful for the work that's already been done, Daniel Hardman and others, and looking forward to getting more involved there. Awesome. Thanks much for that. Next on the agenda is Daniel Hardman and the Aries community did and method. You ready for that, Daniel?
Sure. This will be short. If you've read a lot of protocol hypes from the indie world, and then if you've read Aries RFCs from the Aries world, you know that there's a mechanism for identifying the message type that you're looking at. And that mechanism is a JSON LD based mechanism. You use @type followed by a URI. And the URI has to be composed a particular way where the end of it, the front of it can be whatever you want, but the end of it has to consist of a three-part string where part one is the name of a protocol. Part two is a semantic version of the protocol, and part three is the actual name of a message. This is documented in semver.md in the protocol RFC if you want more details about it. But anyway, many of the protocols that were originally defined used as the beginning of their URI a did that was a sovereign did. And this was unfortunate for a couple of different reasons. One is a technical reason, because sovereign's support for did documents didn't actually allow us to expose the endpoint the way that we wanted to. And then there was a political reason, which is that it gave people the impression that somehow Aries required you to buy into sovereign. In fact, what was really happening here is that the did was being used like a URN. Nobody was actually required to go dereference this or look it up. Code didn't have to have any dependency on anything sovereign related, but it gave the wrong impression. And so George Aristi and some others raised the idea of replacing that did with something that was a lot less politically charged and maybe didn't have the same technical challenge. And so we looked at it and there's an issue, I'm trying to remember the issue number. I should have been prepared to share my screen with that issue, but I'm realizing that.
I can chase it down, Daniel, which one are you talking about?
Yeah, if you could do that, it's, shoot, if you can find the issue, it was logged by George, and it's basically the thought was, can we come up with a different DID instead of a sovereign one? And we all kind of agreed after debating it back and forth that that was a good idea. And the candidates that we considered here included, well, we could switch to a Bitcoin / Ethereum kind of a thing. We could switch to an IPFS thing. We could switch to a Git based thing. All of those have certain virtues, but all of them also introduce certain challenges. Just as a representative one, if we had picked the Bitcoin one, then there would be some political baggage associated with that, and the ability for us to create a DID doc that referenced a signature type other than the SECP256 thing would be problematic. So anyway, we went through a bunch of debates back and forth on this, and we really looked hard at using the DID Git method as a way to create. Here's the goal. We want to create a DID which, if deref, which number one doesn't have political baggage, and number two, if dereferenced, would point somebody to the documentation about the protocol that uses it. And the first goal is more important than the second, but both goals would be desirable. So the Git method was as close as we could get to what we wanted, but it had a couple of challenges, one of which is that it's tied to the implementation of a Git porcelain command that we can't actually use today. And it also kind of emphasizes something a little bit different. The net of this conversation is that we finally decided that we would write a new DID method. Now, there's probably a few of you that are rolling your eyes at this point because we have an over-proliferation of DID methods, but this is a very specialized one. All it's intended to do is just provide an identity and DID document for a community that's managing the repo for Aries RFCs. Although as soon as we realized we wanted this, we thought, oh, this would be a great thing to use in the Aries or in the Hyperledger Indie Ursa repos. Oh, maybe somebody else like would want to use this as a way to create an identity that's really neutral too, like in Diff or anywhere else. So we wrote a method. And what I'm going to do, thank you for bringing up the ticket, Sam, 129. Feel free to comment on this if you'd like, but at this point, the conversation is relatively mature and the method has been written. Can I share my screen for just a second, Sam? Okay, share. Okay, so this is the method. I originally thought that we ought to call this the Aries DID method because Aries was the community that would create it, but we realized it was more generic than Aries, and after I talked to Drummond about this at length, he really didn't want it to carry the Aries brand. So I'm shrugging my shoulders. I don't really care that much. The simple method is basically you create a repo, you check in some DID docs, you go register your repo with a name. You could name your repo foo or bar or whatever you want to, but that name shows up in your DID along with the file name to your DID document. So if anybody wants to resolve a DID document, you just go to the repo, look up the DID document, and lo and behold, you've resolved it. What we're thinking is that we would turn this HackMD document that I'm showing right here into an Aries RFC so that it has some official place to live. And then we would replace all of the DID usage in Aries RFCs that currently uses DID colon sov with this DID colon repo thing instead. This is the current thinking, and we want the community to tell us if this is a bad idea. I hope that the answer is not that because we've spent a fair amount of time thinking about it at this point, but refinements and enhancements or pushback would be gladly accepted now rather than later. If nobody pushes back, then probably within a week we'll have a pull request that proposes to change a bunch of DIDs.
Daniel, question.
It doesn't matter.
Let me ask my question real quick. The obvious question here, and I'm sure you have an answer to it, but I don't know the answer, is why don't we just use did git, rather than did repo? Is that because we were trying to separate it from Git, or?
Well, that is one characteristic that's different. This method is not specific to Git in any way, but there are some characteristics of did git. I actually reached out and talked to Dave Huseby directly about this, and I can share his response, but the short answer is it's not as good of a fit as you might think. And there's some discussion of it in the ticket, and there's more discussion of it in emails and back and forth with Dave Huseby that I can share. But we really tried, actually. It just didn't seem to quite fit when we were done. I would actually... The way that it's currently written, we could abandon this method or rewrite this method so that it actually used did git underneath if we wanted to, if did git matures in a direction that would be more compatible, which it might.
I have a thought about this. I think it's an excellent idea for documentation. So I think it does exactly what you said it should in terms of clarifying, you know, around the political nature, and I think it makes a lot of sense. I am the author of GitHub DID, which is not DID Git. It uses GitHub and GitHub repos.
Well, and, maybe that's what we should use then.
So I you are welcome to take everything of GitHub DID and just replace the DID method name and, you know, handle resolution differently if you want. Or you can use GitHub DID. It will work with your default Hyperledger repos that are already on GitHub. And you're welcome to, you know, fork or open pull requests or do whatever you want. But I personally find a lot of value in the structure that you're proposing here. And that's why I created GitHub DID. And it received a ton of flack for being a centralized DID method. So just fair warning that you will probably encounter that if you in any way try and use it.
Yeah. So first of all, we didn't think about using the GitHub one, and I was peripherally aware that there was one called GitHub, but I didn't know anything about it. I knew about the Git one. So we didn't seriously consider that, and maybe we need to go do our homework. The point is not to create another one. If we can use one that exists, great. It was just that what we saw in the Git one didn't quite match our needs.
Yep, I understand. I also wish that I could have integrated it better with GitHub DID, but, you know, that lack of porcelain understanding on my end prevented me from doing it.
So I can take an action item to go read your GitHub thing. Is it listed in the DID method registry?
It is not. It is a proposal still. It does come with a CLI for creating DIDs and DID documents, a web interface with assign and verify and encrypt and decrypt functionality. It's very similar to DIDCOM. It uses OpenPGP. And it has a resolver and a web application interface. It's just not a registered DID method currently. But I imagine neither is DID repo.
Correct.
So, yeah.
Note about that in the GitHub stream or something so that everybody can look up your method if we want to find it?
I did post it in the chat for this call.
Okay, perfect.
So, Daniel, it's Troy. So just one thought on that. There is an advantage of having this overarching DID spec that we had talked about in repo or Aries, which is the idea that if we wanted to update it in the future, we could do so without changing the did prefix string. If we directly started using did GitHub as the prefix in the protocols, we would lose that. So if there's some useful bits in did GitHub to add to did repo, that's possibly a good idea, but I'm not sure if you want to go down the path of using it directly, because we would lose those kind of advantages, or we'd have to update the GitHub spec itself.
Yeah, so the person who said that you were the author of the GitHub spec, was that Aurier?
Yep, that was me. I'm going to post a link on the issues that you're looking at. I posted it in the Zoom chat.
Okay, good. Good, it's there. Perfect. All right, I'll have a side conversation with you. That would be really good.
Daniel, yeah. Why are you saying you're going to post this as an RFC versus a DID method? If it's a DID method, shouldn't it be in the DID method registry?
Well, the DID method registry is just an HTML file that's published in a central place that has links to methods. And the methods can be anywhere. They can be a Google Doc. They could be published on a website somewhere.
So you're still going to put it in the DID registry,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
That's all I was wondering about. Okay. Yep.
I just didn't think it should be in whatever we did. It probably shouldn't be on HackMD. So
probably not. Although, you know, it's getting better and better, so maybe it should. But
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure you weren't only putting it in Aries and it wouldn't be found by those looking up the DID registry.
Yeah, I think whatever we do, it should just, ideally we want to use something that is as neutral and as friendly as possible. And we do want it to be capable of having keys from any of our respective cryptography environments. So that means the people that are using SecP256, the people that are using RSA, the people that are using ED25519, we want to be able to put a key from all of those different environments into the DID doc for this DID and have it be recognized as a valid DID document by the method. Okay, I took too long. I'm yielding back the microphone and the screen to you, Sam.
Thank you for your work doing this. You know, we kind of made the snap judgment we sort of did about, you know, having a base DID for that early on, and it got us to where we are now, but it's time to fix it. So I appreciate everyone's efforts in furthering that conversation. This is good stuff. Okay, next topic on the conversation are Sam Smith concerns with the divergence between the W3C3 DID resolution and the DID spec.
Okay.
You ready, you ready for that, Sam?
Yeah, so there's I'm gonna post it in the chat. I created an issue and now there's an issue and I'm having a discussion with Marcus. Is Marcus on the call, Sabadello?
Yeah, I'm here listening to you and reading the issues at the same time.
Yeah, okay. So the issue is that the DID spec allows DIDs to include queries and fragments in cases besides fragment IDs and DID URL service parameter endpoints. But the current DID resolvers throw those away, or at least the universal resolver that I tested with, but the logic, as far as I can interpret it, and Marcus can correct me right now, throws those away. So if you try to resolve the DID, all you have to do is attach a query to it, and the resolver will throw it away. It won't return the DID document anymore. It thinks that it's a malformed DID. And I'm not sure why that is the case, but I think that that is probably the result of too narrow a focus on the only use case being that service endpoints for queries, where queries can be used for many other use cases to modify the DID or to modify way you would interpret the DID document when it comes back, because a query string is a set of parameters that allow you to modify a resource. And so when you don't specify a service endpoint, the resource that you're specifying is the DID document. And so you could have a query string that allow method dependent interpretation of the did document or the did itself based on the query string. And so I just want to confirm that I'm not like out in left field in making these statements, because I don't see a lot of discussion about this more expanded use of DIDs. And I'm worried that narrowing to only service endpoints for queries and non-fragment ID fragments is will be problematic down the road. And I just wanted to make sure that I brought that issue up.
Okay, I could respond to that. This is Marcus. So I fully agree that DIDs with queries, or let's more appropriately call them DID URLs, DID with query strings, should be dereferenceable, even if they don't reference a service endpoint, so they don't have a service matrix parameter, but they have a query. I fully agree they should be dereferenceable. The reason why that is not covered right now in the DID resolution spec or implemented in the universal resolver or other resolvers is simply because our understanding of that, I think, is just not mature enough, and we haven't discussed these things enough. The URL DID URL dereferencing algorithm in the DID resolution spec right now captures only some of the very, maybe some of the most common denominator aspects of what people expect out of DID resolution and DID URL dereferencing. There are many more ideas on how queries and fragments and other components of a DID URL should be used. So that's the only reason why it's not there yet, is because we haven't talked about it.
Okay, then I guess we just need to talk about it some more and make sure, because I think in general the default resolution should be not to throw the DID away, but just return it with the query string and stuff intact. I mean, return the document, not say, oh, this is a malformed DID, we don't know what to do with it, so we throw it away, but just say, oh, it's a DID, it resolves, but it's got this extra stuff, and so we don't throw it away.
Yeah, that could be one of the answers. Could also be, the specification could also say that some kinds of DID URLs, for example, this type of DID URL where you have a query string, is somehow method specific or application specific, and therefore it's not really specified in the DID resolution spec itself. But yeah, we just need to spend some more time on it and define what it means to dereference DIDs which have certain URI components. I added this on the agenda for tomorrow's DIDs spec.
Okay. Yeah, and I saw that email you sent me, so that's good. Well, that was really all I had. I just didn't know. It didn't seem like there was much going on in the community with that, and that just seemed like a hole in the specifications to not handle that. It's, and my thing would be that the resolvers should do no harm, which means they shouldn't throw away DIDs that have additional components. They should just return them. They just don't know what to do with the additional components, and so unless that is a bad thing, then they would just return it. That's the most forward compatible way to do that, right? It's like having a protocol where you have undefined fields. If that field has value in it, you don't throw the packet away, you just don't parse that field. That allows for compatibility for somebody to define a new version of the protocol where that field does have a value, and old resolvers will still resolve that new packet. They just won't resolve the new functionality, but they don't throw it away. That's in my mind, that should be the default policy for resolvers.
So I think, Sam, we actually had this discussion in the The issue was with the naked DID, just the DID itself, you can resolve the entire document. And so I think what we decided, and I think it was still an open discussion as far as if you have the query and it returns empty, like an array of keys, should it return an empty JSON array or should it return null or error out? And so I think those are some of the open issues.
Okay.
Sam, I may disagree with you a little bit about the forward compatibility argument. If we feed a DID URL to resolver like the one you described that has a query component, I'm not sure if it should just return the same thing as if you feed it only the DID without the query string, which would be the DID document, right? So if you dereference just the DID that doesn't have any path, query, or fragment, and the result of that dereferencing process is the DID document. Now, if we say a DID resolver returns that default resource, the DID document, whenever it gets a DID URL that has components that it doesn't understand, then that could be problematic as well, right? Because at some point in the future, we may define what it means to dereference a DID URL with a certain query string, and now.
That means resolvers that now work for the new spec would be correct, and old resolvers would just have the old functionality. They're forward compatible in the sense that they don't stop working when you put something new in there, because they throw stuff away, but they don't support the new functionality. That's the nuance, right? It's an empty field that right now is empty, can have value in it, but you don't throw it away when it has value. You just don't know what to do with the value, and so it doesn't break. You know, it's a way of gracefully migrating, but it's a point of discussion. I agree with you that there are potential issues depending on how you interpret it, but I think the discussion on that queries should be, we shouldn't have universal query parameters. If that's the approach, then that means that you wouldn't differentially interpret the DID document based on the query string. The query string is just additional data that is attached to the DID that is interpreted method specific or use specific, but you want to get the DID document. I mean, a workaround is that you just strip the query string before you try to resolve the DID and then reattach it when you get the DID document. I think that's a cumbersome way of approaching it, but I think it's definitely worth the discussion.
So either way, the algorithm, the spec and the resolver implementations, they're all at a very early stage. And this is definitely one of the things that needs to be fixed.
Okay.
Excellent. And I'll note that Marcus has linked the tomorrow's W3CCG DID call in the Zoom chat with information on that. So that's excellent. Any further comments on that? Sounds like the effect is to bring up the conversation and talk about it, which is what we need to do. So that was to good effect.
Could also be rebooting Web of Trust. Topic. I don't know how
many. If we can't resolve it, that would be a good place to talk about it some more.
If we can resolve it, yeah.
Fantastic. Good. So I had one. We have more time than I expected on the call, which is good. There was a topic that I wasn't going to bring up, but I think it's very timely that I'm hoping to. And then we'll. Sounds like we'll have some time for open discussion. We are 6 weeks away from IW. And I was the question I have is that what as a community do we want to target for anyone who happens to be building stuff for IIW? Last time we picked a couple targets and that enabled some interoperability demos to be shown there, which were pretty cool. So my question was, is what do we want to target? I don't know the answers to this, but what ought we to be targeting for IIW?
Is there something related to the interop project where we could demo some combination of interactions from the world of you know, diff thinking and the world of Aries thinking that would be exciting?
Yeah, there's a bunch of opportunities there. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, one that there's already been some initial discussion around is this concept of domain name binding to DIDs. There's an open proposal in the diff around using the well-known URI. And I implemented a demo of that with BTCR. And we could certainly add support for that in some way to, you know, potentially, I guess, Aries HTTP cloud agents in some way, maybe. Not entirely sure how those things would fit together, because it seems like the cloud agents are managing many DIDs on behalf of many individuals. Is that accurate?
Well, one agent manages many DIDs on behalf of a single owner, okay. but can route messages at the request. That's a little bit different, but yeah, so it is many DIDs for a single owner.
Okay.
But back to Daniel's general comment, I think the hope was that in October we can show something about interoperability. To which extent and what it exactly looks like, I guess really depends on how fast we can move some of the questions on the entire project. It would be awesome to just show two or three DIDs to interact with each other, whatever exactly that means. and we even discussing now, like, whether we can put some grant out for someone to build and help us to build like an OpenID Connect library, something to make it easy for people to adopt this. But I'm not sure. October's coming fast. Let's see how fast we can move.
I'd also love to see the interop stuff. I think it would be fantastic. The other thing that I would like to have working is that I would like to be able to use the open source Aries mobile agent, Ozma, working with the Aries Cloud Agent Python. I've currently have an issue open related to that that I'm going to be working to contribute code for, but that's something that I think would be really nice to have, so that could be there. We have talked at the Sovereign Foundation about hosting a forwarding agent, at least in the short term for demo purposes. So if someone wanted to use the open source mobile agent, they would have a path by which they could connect to an agent, have it forward messages on their behalf, and then interact with anybody else without the use of an explicit agency. In that sense, the routing capability of an agency would be offered by this, you know, by an instance that we would stand up. But that was something that we had talked about, and that's something that we are considering whether we can get it working in that time frame.
So just so you know, Sam, Sukalpo Mitra in Singapore has got that running already. He's sent us some demo or some screen shares and things, and he's already done that. So we got a good start on it.
is that code open source? I'm kind of curious.
I don't know.
Process.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we'll have to find out. He's been working it on just on his own. And he's just making incredible progress. For those who don't know, this guy started working in, you know, I got my first Rocket Chat message from July 1st saying he had just started working on Indie Aries stuff. And by, you know, within three or four weeks, he had issuer, verifier, credential exchange running on stuff he'd built himself. And by now, midway through August, he's also got that working with Ozma and, you know, working on Android and I think iOS, but at least Android, and spinning up a couple of Akapai servers with controllers that he's implemented and things like that. So he literally jumped in right at the highest level. Sukalpo Mitra, he is on, and he's on Rocket Chat. He's just doing some awesome stuff. I'm hoping to get him. He's just getting ready a demo. He sent us a couple, and I'd like him to present at one of these upcoming ones. He's got some really cool stuff to show.
That'd be awesome, actually. I'll see if I can reach out to him and see where he is, because that would that's something that's on our task list. And if he's already accomplished a lot of that, maybe we could figure out how to get that stuff contributed upstream if he's willing. So,
yeah, awesome. Yeah, so he's based in Singapore. So, you know.
Cool. The other thing that comes up, Daniel Hardman, is that we had a conversation, you and I, about the protocol or the credential exchange protocols.
And oh, yes. Yeah, last Friday. I said I was going to do something about that, and I haven't done anything useful. Can we just repeat it back so everybody's aware of what we were talking about?
Yeah, let me try a replay. The what I detected was a concern not only inside of our community but outside about calling those protocols a 1.0 release, as if we were sort of declaring something final. And particularly with credential exchange, we're going to have a lot of improvement going forward as we expand key suites and use cases and things that we're not even currently aware of. And so what we had talked about was proposing to move to change nothing about the existing RFC except move it from a 1.0 to like a 0.4 or something, to help people understand that this is the next step at the iteration and we have something to target. We have two organizations in the community targeting that RFC, but it still isn't really moving forward yet. So if we redid the version number to like 0.4, then we could agree to target that in the meantime while we discuss the next one, which we should probably not call 1.0, but like 0.5 or 0.6. And that way people would be less concerned that we are trying to declare what the protocol should be for the rest of time, but rather just take the next step forward. Did I replay that, Daniel?
Yeah. So I would be curious to know, this doesn't, in my opinion, all this does really is it just gets us a little bit more careful about the impression that we give. Nobody had ever claimed that this RFC embodied perfection. We claimed that it was useful and it was worth trying to implement. And there are some of us that are trying to implement it. And we've also been claiming that it should accommodate the needs of credentials of various types, not just ones that are ZKP related. And we really think that's true. We thought through what it would take to use the sequence of messages that's discussed in the RFC without ZKPs being involved. And we thought we had satisfied ourselves that, you know, it worked fine. But maybe we should just be a little bit more modest in how we build this, just because it will worry people less.
Okay, my thoughts are, I think it's, we can go down a rabbit hole forever on picking what number a specific thing should be. Numbers are just numbers, and we have more of them whenever we need them. So, I mean, I think it's kind of not a particularly useful discussion, but I'm fine with it. I do want it to be done in a hurry because we're about to release our first implementation of it. We're well on the way of having it done. So if you're going to change the number, do it now. And then the other side is, I don't agree with you, Daniel, that we have accounted for other communities, because no other communities, no other types have tried using it. And so, well, I think it's good to say, and maybe we did, proof is in the pudding, and no other implementations are there. And until we see that, I don't think we can really say that.
Well, right. I wasn't claiming that it did. I was claiming that we tried. We really did think it through. We sat down and asked ourselves how.
Yep. No, I agree with that. I'm just saying that if that's the level for number one, and we don't, you know, it could be forever before we get there, or, you know, whatever, you know, it until others try it, we're not going to know, and right. And they're going to come back with, oh, this doesn't work yet. So trying to gauge when we call it 1.0 or when we call it 1.1, for me, as long as we start with a number and we continue to increment it, we're good. So it doesn't matter to me, but I do really want to get it a number decided and picked for this RFC, because we're ready to have an implementation done.
here's the distinction that everybody needs to keep in mind. According to the SEMVER rules that we said we would follow in the community, any number before 1.0 is not required to be backwards compatible with any other number before 1.0. So if we make this 1.0, then we're saying that from then on, evolutions will use the rule that minor versions are just introductions of new fields or whatever, and major revisions would take a 2.0 thing. If we make this something before 1.0, then the next thing before 1.0 doesn't have to have a lot in common with this version. So that's really, I think, the question we should pose to ourselves is, how much do we want to buy into stability for this version of the spec? I would prefer to say that we should make it more stable, because I'm one of the people that's investing in implementing this, and that makes it so that I can bet on my investment a little bit more confidently. But I just want to know what the community thinks.
I think once we get to version 1.1 or anything but 1.0, we're not going to have this problem. I think the 1.0 just conveys a mental image that we didn't intend. And it's causing a little bit of grief. We solve it with lots of explanations about what it doesn't mean. But Daniel and I had this conversation, we realized that switching it to 0.4 might not be very hard and would completely, I think, erase any of those unintended things that that we had not intended to happen. The other thing that we talked about is, as soon as, if we did this and then approved this and nailed it so that, the people currently writing code to it could trust it a little bit more, we would immediately open up the next version release and begin continue conversations. But those conversations can happen without the added panic of affecting current development priorities. George plus one the downgrade something to less than 1.0 in the comments. No one else has really voiced an opinion. Any other opinions on this topic? We really, really want to know. No opinions from this community. That's semi-rare.
Actually, I have the opinion that that's really rare. Well, so George gave a plus one, but I'd like to hear from somebody in the diff community. Would you be happier if we gave this a version number that was less than 1.0 until we had some evidence that we could use JWT style credentials with it?
Is that question directed at me?
That's directed at anybody who has a diff hat that they're wearing.
I think you should just, I don't have an opinion about that. I think that whatever version scheme you've already started down, you should continue with it unapologetically.
Okay, well, as far as I know, the BCGov folks that are investing in the Occupy code base, and maybe Troy and George in the Go code base, are you guys also implementing this protocol?
We will. We haven't quite reached that point yet, but we will soon.
Okay. So I think the only people that are affected are you two plus Evernym people that are implementing this.
No, that's not right, because we're working with others to that we already are compatible with and working with them to upgrade to it. I, again, I okay. mean, to me, I don't I think the number should be what it is. I don't think it matters because we can use 2.0 or we can use 1.1. We've got all these numbers. But yes, there's a whole lot more than just the people that are implementing it today. I mean, we're going to continue to support the 0.1 for the foreseeable future until we know that all our partners that have used that, all the others that have used that or the demos we're using are have moved off it. That's part of backwards compatibility in this case is that we'll continue to, or actually that's not backwards compatibility, that's just supporting a second version until we can turn it off. But
so I think the
there's
perception,
a lot more than.
Well, I think that, to summarize, the people that have already written code, it's a lot easier if we just don't change anything because they've already got code that is at least partially working and perhaps fully working. The perception issue that we have is that we're locking something down, and we may be able to sufficiently fight that perception by immediately opening up a new one for the next version of this. Maybe we should reserve, call it what the next version is actually numbered until we know what it entails, but immediately open discussions on the next version of this, and that way we can continue the conversations there. And that might immediately solve the perception issue because people can say, okay, great, let's go engage on the next version. And I think that might sufficiently solve the perception problem. And that way we don't have any code to change now, but we work to get it, that RFC status changed as soon as possible. And then we can open up a new one so that we can continue conversations that are on future topics.
Okay. It sounds like, there's enough of a pushback that we won't implement this change. I would point out that there's going to be a change anyway if we change the did from did:solve to something. And it's going to be essentially the identical change, meaning you're going to have to search and replace in your code bases and change the string that's being used to identify messages. But if people are kind of regretting that and feeling like it's a waste, I won't push hard for it.
That change is going to be a little different because you're going to have to look for both in that case. What we're talking about here is what I mean, it's just going to change from did:solve to did repo, but it'll still be 1.0 or whatever we decide to call it, 0.98 or.
Yeah.
So it is kind of a different situation.
The looking for both thing happens just because of trying to bridge, right? During a transition period. The problem with looking for both on the 1.0 and the 0.4 is that you will eventually have another 1.0 that you can't, you need to modify. So it's similar, but a different change.
I'm a bit puzzled. I apologize. My connection hasn't been solid. Why we're so hesitant to call it a 1.0, given that as soon as we have a 1.0, we'll start with a 1.1 or a 2.0. It's not freezing it in time, but it's giving us a target that we can, that I need to be able to tell my customers what I support, and not having any accepted standard has proven problematic for me.
Your perception, Richard, is not the perception that we're worried about. And this is not an imagined thing. We've had people voice concerns specifically that we think we're deciding the universe when we haven't properly received their input. So the
alternative is that we continue having no spec ratified after how many months of meeting?
No, the alternative is that we call the spec a 0.4, ratify it immediately, and move on to the next version. And the action we're going to take is regardless the same. And I think we ought to just leave it alone and approve the one we've got as soon as we can, and then immediately begin working on the next version. And that will help people understand that we're not trying to lock something down. You understand it the way that we intend it. The problem is that there's others that don't understand what our intent is in this process, and they think that we're magically deciding what this protocol is going to exist like for the next 10 years. And that's not at all what we intend.
But the other way to address that concern is to get started on the 2.0 and solicit that feedback.
That's exactly the alternative, and I think that will sufficiently assuage the misperception that's happening.
Well, but the difference is instead of saying the current spec is not ready to implement against and preserve backwards compatibility, we say it is, call it 1.0, and solicit that feedback into the 2.0 spec that we start, that we accelerate the feedback process and people see it.
Yes, and I think that's what we're hearing is that's the easier choice to go through. And as long as we immediately begin discussions of the new one, I think the effect will be the same.
I think also coupled with the immediate discussion of the new one is to set some kind of an expectation for time frame for the new one. The time frame for 2.0 or 2.1.3 is not 4 years in the future. It's, we're not just discussing it, we'll begin working on it fairly immediately as well.
That's a good enhancement. I like that.
Me too. Setting the time frame also helps people realize that it is worth implementing the one we just ratified, because it's not going to be a week before the next one comes along. So it serves both purposes, right? It encourages development and it helps people realize that it's worth getting involved in the discussions. Okay, so it sounds like we should do whatever we can to ratify the existing one, so it just lives and exists in place, and then we will move to as soon as that happens, we'll move to open up the next on RFC, the targeting the next protocol release of those. Okay, that took longer than I expected, but I think that that discussion is probably over. Any issues, including discussions of what we want to talk about on next week's call?
So I had a topic we wanted to raise, basically around providing containers and images, Docker images for release products. So we've had really good success with using Vaughn Network, which is a basically tagged versions of indie releases as Docker images that we can then pull out. And then the second thing that started the conversation as well in our world is we'd like to have a repo that is basically Akapai container and it have as its artifact a Docker image posted under Hyperledger that is an Akapai Docker image that you can use basically as is. Just from a Docker command line, or as the basis of adding additional things to it, and it's all set to go with all of the dependencies necessary. So that's a topic we'd like to see if the community wants, and would like to figure out exactly what the split should be. Don't know if that made sense, but
yes,
welcome feedback on that.
So increasing Dockerness for composable testing and releases. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah. So basically you can build Docker Compose scripts and either deployments or whatever, but base it on released official, if you will, images, as opposed to having to keep building Docker images from scratch, starting from base Ubuntu 1804 or 1604, but you could actually start from, I'm going to start from Akapai version 0.3.1, and now I only have to add whatever is different about my own. So we found that's been super useful in our world so that we don't have to worry about those things. So if you're not actually editing, if you're not maintaining Akapai itself, but just using it, then you can build from tagged releases.
Okay, I've got the topic for next week's call. Other topics or any other open discussion?
Do we want to review any RFCs that are in a final comment period? Not necessarily deeply, but just remind everybody about those.
That sounds like an excellent topic. You mean right now or next week?
Yeah, just really quick. Can we just, before we're done, can we just pull that up and show everybody what's in final comment period?
Yes, we have. We still have the blocked for credential exchange RFCs. Basic message is sitting there, and decorators is sitting there as well. Are the three for credential exchange the block status? I think what we really need to do is add verbiage. I don't think there was a suggestion to change the protocol, just to clarify text.
So we had Stephen Curran submit some clarification, and that PR was accepted. So I don't think that should be considered blocked anymore.
Are you sharing your screen?
No. That would be incredibly useful, wouldn't it? Thank you for calling me out on that. Okay, so we have the credential exchange RFCs should not be blocked anymore because those clarifications were accepted. Did I hear that correctly?
That's my understanding, but double check me.
I think so.
Okay. I'm happy to unblock this and have it continue on the normal. Well, this was added 3 days ago. I think he was probably just trying to update it.
We should probably close the issue. There's a separate issue that we created to track the particular piece of feedback that George gave. And when Stephen's PR was merged, I may have forgotten to close the issue. If the issue is ready to be closed, then I think at the same time the issue is closed, it should be unblocked. Those two go together.
Gene, do you happen to know which one it is?
Why do you ask such hard questions? maybe it's not in there. Maybe it is closed.
It might be closed. I can look at closed ones real quick.
It was that one right there, the third one.
Okay, yeah, it's been closed. So we should definitely pull, and I'm not actually entirely sure we should reset the date. What does our process say about that?
It says that we pause it when we get substantive feedback, and then I think from there it says that we decide what to do. If the substantive feedback resulted in significant changes, maybe we do reset the date. If it was just adding some data, then we just continue forward once we've unblocked ourselves. So I think we could decide. The community can decide.
Since we added clarification text, my vote is that it was not substantive. And that we should leave the date alone. Any dissenting voices?
Plus one from me.
Okay, I have removed the label then. I don't hear any dissenting votes. Okay, so that's back online then. And I think we should keep the original date. The feedback, I should mention the process had the positive effect. Someone had an objection with it. We addressed the objection. It's now good. So we should continue, right? So this was not a bad part of the process. This is a good part of the process that brought those things up. The date on that is the 19th, which is before our next meeting. So today's the 14th. And so the 19th is before our next meeting, and both of the basic message and credential exchange RFCs will move status before our next meeting. Then, any complaints to that happening? Okay.
One related topic, but the next topic, there is an indie hype PR that has been waiting from Brent Zundel. And I'm trying to figure out, is it anything or is it one of the Aries things that was just late and we need to get it moved? We can make that a topic for next meeting or something, but if somebody can look at that and figure out what the next step is, I'd appreciate it because I'm a bit puzzled.
For sure. We'll do that during our next RFC review. That sounds like a good plan. Next week. Steven, you mentioned that it would be nice to get our Singapore friend on and demo his stuff. Do you think we might be able to arrange that?
I'll talk to him and see if he's interested in doing that.
That would be nice. We haven't had a demo in a bit. It'd be nice to have a demo for that.
Sounds good. Yeah, I think that's a great idea.
Awesome.
So this is about the worst possible time for a meeting for somebody in Singapore.
Maybe we should do it on the morning one. Isn't next week though?
He's been doing videos, so maybe we could do that at worst case. But I often interact with him at weird times, so there's a shot.
On Kyle's standard time, we should just ask him.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. So I think if he gets a chance to present, I think he'd be delighted to. That would be my guess. But again, I'm no promises.
Yep, of course. Okay, sounds good. And then it's worth bringing up some more RFCs to review as well. One topic that we have brought up before and then haven't made recent progress on was the concept of mailboxing messages so that you could receive messages for someone that didn't have that doesn't have an endpoint. So you're a cloud agent or a routing agent that's servicing an edge agent, and I would like to revive that. And so I will I'll do my best to prep that topic for next week. There's been some stuff by BCGov. Andrew wrote some stuff, and there's also some stuff by the Matter folks. And so I'll try to round that up, and we can have a discussion and see how we want to move forward on that. That was stuff that I pulled out of the return route RFC to make it uncontroversial. I think we should re-controversialize the topic so that we can make some forward progress on it. So I'll add that into the list as well.
One other thing I don't think we announced, but Tomislav was on Rocket Chat the other day and suggesting that he's going to push the street cred agent framework into Hyperledger, which is very cool. That would be really good. So it's likely to be AriesFramework.net, worth letting people know and encouraging Tomislav to do that and the street cred folks to do that.
That is awesome. The open source mobile agent is actually based on that code base as well. So that's a nice step forward in terms of open frameworks. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay, it's 2:30. We thank you folks for coming. And we will see you next week and on Rocket Chat.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Thanks all.